Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. Drink beer, talk NFL and college football. I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pint Glass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? We are back with another loaded show today. We'll discuss the Trey Lance trade, give our final thoughts on NFL preseason, give out our first helmet stickers of the year. We're going to preview college football week one, and we'll preview the NFC North. But joining me to break it all down, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what is going on?
Hey, Brad, 1 week away. This is the big fantasy draft week. So I know a lot of people, a lot of you are busy setting up your draft boards or probably already in your drafts, given whatever time you have them. And college football, we already had week zero. We're going into week one with that. So this is going to be an exciting upcoming week that we have in terms of everything that's happening. I can't wait. We've been waiting all summer for this. I'm so happy that it's here.
Man, I know it's been a long summer. We've been trying to hold it down for you, PGF Nation, but it is here. College football started last week. Man, that was so fun. Those week zero games. I know we didn't have some of the best matchups. I get it, but it was just great to see some real college football preseason wrapping up. NFL about to get started. We've got week one college football with a lot better matchups that we're going to talk about later in the show. Lots of fun stuff, man. Football is here, guys. I am so excited. Alex, I know you're fired up. We got a lot to dive into today. I want to start with some news, though. The Trey Lance trade has really been the big story this week. The 49ers sent Lance to the Dallas Cowboys in exchange for a fourth-round pick in 2024. As we know, Lance was the number three overall pick in the 2021 draft. The Niners, at the time, traded their 21, 22, and 23 first-round picks, along with a 22 compensatory third-round pick, to move up and draft Trey Lance. This is going to go down is a major failure as far as draft trades. This might be one of the worst all time. When I look at the situation, Alex, Lance and the Niners not working out, it really comes down to Lance's injury luck, Brock Purdy being a steal in last year's draft, and they just didn't have the time to wait for Lance to develop, and he just hasn't shown enough in the limited opportunities that he had for the Niners. They just can't pay a guy that much money to be a third-string quarterback. They had to move off of him. It makes sense. Well, I want to get your thoughts on this, though, because there's a lot of different angles. There's the Niners angle, the Cowboys angle, and the Trey Lance angle. What are your thoughts on this situation?
Well, I'll start with the 49ers angle first. I think, and to your point, you said it's a debacle of a trade. However, out of one of these drafts, you have seemingly have found your franchise quarterback, depending on how you feel about Brock Purdy. So the sting doesn't hurt as much when you already feel that you may have a guy in the building. So that's the first thing. The whole point is it's not about missing on the quarterback. It's the point of not ever having one, but you ended up finding one. So the sting out of that trade doesn't hurt as much, even though some of those trades of those picks turned into Micah Parsons and so forth. Now, what it does for the 49ers, it clears up the locker room, it stops the press from asking questions, and they can move on with Brock Purdy as their number one, and Sam Darnold as a promising number two. Let's all remember, Sam Darnold came into this league at 20. He's only 24, 25 right now, so he still has a lot to offer as a young quarterback. Perhaps if Purdy doesn't look the part now going into a full year, and you get to see what you have. But on their track, they seem to feel that they found their franchise quarterback. Now, let's move on to the Cowboys aspect of it. There are 2 years left on Dak's contract, and we know that this contract was something that he wanted so he can get out of it early, so he can renegotiate again and get another huge paycheck. Now, this gives Dallas an opportunity to work with a quarterback that they think has first-round talent that they can have in their system for 2 years and develop. There's a lost art form with this new way quarterbacks are coming into the system. If you remember, I don't know, however many years you want to go back, your quarterback used to at least wait a year. Not all of them, but most of them used to wait a year before they came in and started. I want to say Patrick Mahomes was probably the last quarterback that sat before he started. But a majority of quarterbacks that were first round quarterbacks usually did not start right away. They waited a little while. They waited perhaps a season and then they started. So now you get this guy in your system to be able to sit and develop. And I remember, and I don't have the numbers in front of me anymore, but I said he had taken about 283 snaps in 2019, live snaps in 2019 in college. And he had only taken about 102 live snaps since 2019. He simply has not been healthy enough. He simply has not had enough practice, not enough live snaps to really truly know what this person is. Now, from the Trey Lance aspect of it, this now gives you're out of the spotlight. This is all on Dak and what the Dallas Cowboys branding is. No one is going to be worried about you, Trey. No one's going to be talking about you. You're going to be able to go into as the third string behind Cooper Rush. You're not going to be in the spotlight. No one is going to be asking you question after question, talking about you in any type of way. You're going to be able to go focus solely on football and not have to worry about the media narrative or anybody else talking about you, and practice, get those snaps up, get those throws up, get fully healthy and not have to worry about being thrust into action. So I think this worked out for all three teams. There's always going to be the draft aspect for the 49ers, but I think I like what it means for all three, for both teams as well as the individual. I think it could possibly work out for all of them, because in 2 years, if you don't want to re-sign Dak and now you feel that you've developed Trey to a certain point, perhaps you can just bring this gentleman in at a lower cost and keep that team strong on the defensive side, the offensive line side, and the skill positions, and move forward while continuing to develop him. So it can possibly work out in their favor, in Dallas's favor, as well as the players.
I could see that, Alex. I think from a development standpoint, though, my only concern is that being in that third string spot, we know that most third string quarterbacks are not getting reps at practice. They're getting little to none. And so I wonder if he's actually going to get any time to actually develop. We know Cooper Rush is in place as a solid backup quarterback who Dallas really likes. I think this was more a move from Jerry Jones looking at a distressed asset, thinking that he could get him for a fourth round pick, and maybe there's some value there long term. And more than anything else, I think this is to light a fire under Dak. I think this is to put some pressure on him to show him that, like, look, you need to do something here. Otherwise, we might be looking to the future to some degree. But here's the thing about trading Trey Lance. Kyle Shanahan is probably the best evaluator of quarterbacks in the entire league. We know he's the best quarterback coach in the entire league. Nobody gets more from less at the quarterback position than Kyle Shanahan. And if Kyle Shanahan is ready to move off of a guy like Trey Lance, that's a huge red flag. And it feels like, look, there's no scenario where this guy could potentially work for us. If that's what he's saying here, which he did basically say that by moving off of him, that's a big red flag for me. It's kind of like, I thought about this, Alex. When the Pittsburgh Steelers, a team that drafts and develops wide receivers at the highest level in the league, when they traded Chase Claypool, a guy who was still really young, to the Bears for essentially what would become a first-round pick, the 32nd pick, that was a huge red flag too. Because if the Steelers are giving up on a young wide receiver, they know something you don't. Because nobody does wide receivers better than the Pittsburgh Steelers. Nobody does quarterbacks better than Kyle Shanahan. So getting a fourth-round pick for a guy, I think, is great value, actually, for the 49ers from that standpoint, because I don't think any team in the league was going to give up more than a sixth or seventh round pick. Jerry got aggressive, gave them a four, and I think they're happy to get it. Arizona Cardinals decided to cut Colt McCoy, and they're going to keep Kyler Murray on the PUP list. To me, Alex, it's become abundantly clear that the Cardinals are looking to rebuild, and that I think the tank job has officially started, because this team knows they could win games with Colt McCoy. Are they going to be great? No. But I think they know with him at quarterback, they're at least competitive and are going to win a few games. And I think it's clear that's the last thing they want to do right now. They're after Caleb Williams, and they want to move on from Kyler Murray. I think the writing is on the wall.
Yeah, we talked about this, and one of my hot takes was that I felt that the Cardinals were not going to play Kyler Murray this year, but they're showing us, let's just say over the past 3 weeks, trading Isaiah Simmons for the seventh round pick. And please don't be surprised if Buda Baker is on the move by this weekend, some point in time, we'll wake up tomorrow morning or sometime in the next 2 days, and he's traded as well. They cut Colt McCoy, so we know what's happening there. And to be honest, I meant to look at their depth chart because I currently don't know who their starting quarterback is going to be. You know, we know they have Rondale Moore. We know they have Marquise Brown. By the way, wink, wink, I wonder how Marquise Brown feels about wanting a trade out of Baltimore now, what his life is looking like now as a football player. But there's a lot going on in Arizona. I don't know. This is, I'm at a loss of words. I mean, I thought they were just going to go through the season and probably try and get the first overall pick. And then we can talk about my feelings on that and your feelings on that, because I think we differ a little bit there. But it's interesting to see that this is the stance that they're taking, getting rid of Isaiah Simmons for a seventh round pick, which is peanuts for a guy that plays inside linebacker, outside linebacker, corner, and both safety positions. I just don't know what this team is thinking. I would love to be a fly on the wall for upper management to say, this is what we're going to do, because you have to be planning this out from the outset. This is not a midseason pivot. This is what you're planning from the outset. The Cardinals are going to be a fascinating watch, from the players to the media to the coaching, to see how they handle all the scrutiny that's about to come with them. Excuse me, that's about to come to them this season.
Yeah, and if you're Jonathan Gannon, what are you thinking? You're sitting there thinking, man, what did I get myself into with this head coaching job? Because this franchise is an absolute mess. You're right. They're tearing this thing down. I think it's obvious. And I'd be really frustrated if I was him, thinking, what's the direction of this franchise? Now, you hinted at something here, because I'm guessing you hinted at Caleb Williams. And I think you feel differently about Caleb than I do. I don't want to go too far off a tangent here, but give me your thoughts on that.
Well, I think we both agree that Caleb Williams is looking like he's going to be something special, and that he will undoubtedly be the number one pick if he continues where he left off last year. I think we just probably differed on what Arizona would do if they had the number one pick. I felt that because they also have, they have Houston's number one pick. Houston looks like they're going to be another top 10, perhaps top five pick. So with them, I have another two top five picks next year. I thought, in my terms of looking at it, is since they invested so much money into Kyler Murray, is that they would select Marvin Harrison wherever they are in the top five, and then perhaps maybe do something again, maybe get an offensive lineman or something with that other first round pick, or maybe they trade it and try to double up, because they need a lot of pieces. That's my thought on it. And I know you had a different thought process, which is a perspective that is not too far out of my mind once I started truly considering it. It would just be, with this team going what they went through, and now we're going too deep into it, but this team going through what they went through, from Josh Rosen to Kyler Murray to then do it again, I just think that is the epitome of bad management.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And when I look at this situation, first off, who would want to trade for Kyler Murray? That's really the big question here, because they just got that contract extension. It's going to make moving him difficult. And we've seen his stock on the decline recently. He's definitely not viewed as the same player he was just a couple seasons ago. So I'm not sure how hot of a commodity he would actually be in the trade market. And second, if I'm Caleb Williams, let's hypothetically say Arizona does finish with the number one pick. If I'm Caleb Williams, I'm pulling a John Elway or an Eli Manning, and I'm saying, nope, I'm not going to sign with your dysfunctional mess of a franchise. That's just my thoughts. And I wouldn't be completely shocked if he pulled something like that, because we're talking about a guy who I think is truly a generational prospect. And I'm emphasizing the word prospect, because we all know some guys aren't going to pan out. But as far as looking at what he brings to the table, I am so high on this guy. I think he's the best prospect since Andrew Luck. I think it's going to be really, really hard if they're sitting there with the number one pick to potentially pass on a guy who could be a franchise game-changing quarterback. But we'll leave that for another pod, Alex, before we get too deep into the weeds here. But it's definitely fascinating what's going on in Arizona. They're going to be a team, a bad team, but they're going to be a bad team to pay attention to this year because of this storyline. Raiders running back Josh Jacobs, his holdout finally came to an end with a reported one-year deal worth up to $12 million. Josh Jacobs led the NFL in rushing last year when he ran for over 1,600 yards and 12 touchdowns. This offseason narrative was all about the running backs and not getting the deals they wanted. Now most of these guys are getting paid, but mostly short-term or one-year deals. I don't expect that to change much going forward, Alex. I think the big long-term deals for NFL running backs are a thing of the past.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. I think we're going into this transitional period for we've actually been in it for a while, but now that a lot of the running backs are speaking up, now we're going to have to see where the market sits. He got a $12 million deal. He was supposed to schedule to make 10. They gave him two extra. I like Josh. As a Raiders fan, I like Josh Jacobs. He's a leader in the locker room, always shows up to work, will play hurt, will do whatever needs to be done to help the team win. So I like this, and I like it for him. But in terms of the market, I just hate it for what it looks like for this market. I mean, and furthermore, we can talk about the news that came out today where we just found out that the Colts said they're no longer looking into trading Jonathan Taylor. So that's another thing when you start talking about the market as a whole, where this is going to go. We spoke about it earlier on a couple of pods ago. I said it, I thought it was a bad idea from his side that he didn't have any power in this situation. And it's showing across the board that a lot of these running backs don't have a lot of power, although that Josh Jacobs got this extra $2 million. What does that mean if he doesn't have another great season or if he gets hurt? Hopefully he doesn't get hurt. And this goes for Saquon Barkley as well, because a lot is riding on this season on these two gentlemen. Basically, the future of the running back position in terms of pay can ride on the legs of these two running backs, and it's a lot of pressure on them. Not only to make sure that they're healthy, but to make sure that they produce, because then we get to see when you go into the offseason what the fruits of that labor will actually generate for them in the open market.
Alex, the preseason has wrapped up. I thought we'd give our final preseason takeaways. We've been kind of following the preseason here. It's been a lot of fun these last couple of weeks, focusing on some of these young guys, some of these rookies, and some key players to watch here. I'll let you kick this off. What are your kind of final thoughts here in preseason? Maybe some things you saw in the last week of preseason that stood out to you.
I'm going to go right to the Jets and Giants game because it was the first time we got to see Aaron Rodgers in action. And I mean, it was kind of shaky a little bit, but the zip on the ball was there. The reads were there. The one thing I do want to really, truly point out and where we can start to talk about where the difference Aaron Rodgers makes was the touchdown pass to Garrett Wilson. And it wasn't the ball placement. It wasn't the throw. It wasn't the recognition. It was the fact that that play was a running play. If you look at how the offensive lineman fired off and the direction of the play, that was strictly a running play. That was Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson being in tune because nobody else on the team knew what was going to happen except those two players. That is what Aaron Rodgers can bring to your team. That was incredible ball placement. Excellent catch. Garrett Wilson looks like, and it's funny enough, he's wearing number 17 as well of some other, I don't know, wide receiver that he used to play with named Davante Adams, but we don't have to talk about that guy. But it's interesting to see how in tune he is with the receivers, or at least with this specific receiver and what we saw. There were a couple of drops that I saw that probably should have been caught, but Aaron Rodgers looks very, very, very sharp in this offense, and we know what that defense is. Now, really quick, on the flip side of that, I want to talk about that defense, and I want to talk about two players, because it was the second and third string of the Giants playing against the first string defense of the Jets. Sauce Gardner and Jalin Hyatt. Jalin Hyatt coming out of Tennessee is a burner. On the first play of the game, Jalin Hyatt put Sauce Gardner to sleep on a double move, and he was wide open. Unfortunately, Tyrod Taylor could not hit him in stride. But I watched that, and even though I have the Giants finishing last, that popped to me. That was like, oh, okay, they're going to be different this year. They're going to be doing a few things differently this year. They have some weapons that they seem to like because you don't go out against Sauce Gardner in the way that we've been talking about him. We're going to go a double move, deep double move, straight out the gate, first play of the game against this defense, which is going to mean a 5-7-step drop to pull that playoff against that first string defense. That's not something you want to do with how this Jets defense has been looking this offseason. But Brian Daboll had the guts to pull it off.
Yeah, Alex, that was impressive. Aaron Rodgers was sharp. The Jets looked sharp. This is a team I'm buying stock. I've said it all offseason here. I'm buying stock in this team. I really like what I've seen from this squad and just the energy and what they're bringing right now. And I liked what I saw from Aaron Rodgers on offense. But to your point here, Jalen Hyatt, a guy that I was a little down on compared to the consensus as far as his draft value. But I also said where they got him in the draft, I thought was great value because he slid past where most people thought he'd get taken. And I think he ended up being a great value where they got him. But you're right. That kid is a burner. He had, what, two steps on Sauce Gardner in that highlight you were talking about?
Absolutely. He had three. I counted it. He had 3 yards on Sauce Gardner before the ball was thrown out of bounds.
Yeah, no, that was impressive. There's no doubt about it. And he is a guy that is clearly going to be able to take the top off the defense. And when you've got an elite running back and you've got guys who can make plays underneath, like a Waller at tight end, now you've got something here. This offense has what you look at as the all three levels. They're going to be able to run the ball, get chunk plays with a guy like Hyatt, and they're going to be able to beat you in the intermediate and underneath stuff with a guy like Waller, and they're going to be able to beat you in the seam. So this offense, you're right, Alex, I think it's going to look very different and a lot more explosive this year. And I think that could be a really good sign for the New York Giants. Now I want to talk about a quarterback who didn't look very good. Stetson Bennett, who, let's face it, Alex, he is who we thought he was. We were down on this draft pick. We were down on this guy. Look, he was a great story coming out of Georgia, a walk-on, two-time national champ. That's great. This is the NFL. And we knew, you and I knew at least, that this was not a guy worth taking in the fourth round. He looked okay in his first preseason game, but he came crashing back down to earth in that 41-0 loss to the Broncos. He threw two ugly picks in just 9 pass attempts, and Sean McVay pulled him. I mean, it was bad. It looked really bad. And the Rams, on a side note here, have looked really bad. They were outgained 494 to 159. This team, I'm starting to really think that this Rams team is in big, big trouble. They might be right there with their NFC West rivals fighting for that number one pick. I mean, this is going to be a really bad football team the more I look at it, because they got outgained and it really wasn't even close. And it was versus a lot of guys who aren't even probably going to make the Broncos roster. So that's a really alarming sign. And they have been bad all preseason long. Now, a quarterback that looked really good was Will Greer for the Cowboys. I mean, this guy was lights out, 350 plus yards, 4 touchdowns for Dallas. And then now they're going to cut him to make room for Trey Lance. So this is just a wild story here in Dallas, because I don't think it's going to be long before Will Greer ends up on an NFL roster. Probably by the time this episode airs, he's going to be playing somewhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think this is some of the things, shout out to a lot of the teams that do this. They played Will Greer the entire game to showcase him because they knew that they were going to cut him. So they gave him an opportunity to go out there and basically win himself another job someplace else by giving him the full opportunity. But yeah, I mean, I watched that game, obviously being a Raiders fan. I watched him not only, you know, throw the ball all over the place, but he was also taking off and running as well. And I mean, he wasn't even running out of bounds. He was still turning inbounds so that he could gain more yardage. So you could tell, like, this guy really wants to stay in this league by some of the things that he was doing. On the flip side, that was another play I was going to go to. The Raiders' first round pick finally got some preseason action, Tyree Wilson. I was skeptical when he was drafted. I was a person that wanted a cornerback, specifically Christian Gonzalez, but I tempered my feelings after the first initial shock that they didn't do what I wanted to do. But in watching him in limited action, he hasn't had a lot of, because he came in with an injury, he hasn't had a lot of time in camp, so his snap count was very low. But in the snap counts that I saw, at least twice, I saw him literally show the low anchor speed and power to bowl over tackles with his long frame and long arms and get to the quarterback and or pressure the quarterback, which is something that the Raiders desperately need on the other side of Max Crosby, and also to help out the rest of the team. So I was happy to see that, even in limited snaps, even in limited time in camp, that he looked and came on the field as an immediate impact player. Still a bunch of sloppy plays. I saw more sloppy plays than I did see impact plays, but I was happy to see that, to say, okay, there's something he's flashing immediately. And that's kind of what you want from your number one. You want him to flash immediately. And that's what he did for me. And I'm like, okay, it's going to be slow out the gate for him, but around maybe week 4 or 5, after he has a lot more practice time and a lot more reps under him, he's going to start to be a contributor around week 4 or 5. So I did like to see that away. And also shout out to Daniel Carlson, the 62-yarder. That was interesting at the end of the half as well.
A guy that's been flashing talent. I talked about him last week, but he looked good again. Titans rookie running back Tyjae Spears. He continues to look pretty impressive. And I think he's going to get plenty of carries this year behind Derrick Henry. He's a guy that I'm excited about. And fantasy alert, I think he's a guy maybe to target late in your draft because I like what I've seen from him. Now, another guy we've talked about who continues to look good, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. He's actually looking so good that the Browns traded their previous quarterback to Josh Dobbs to the Arizona Cardinals. He's going to be their backup quarterback to Deshaun Watson this year. He's looked really sharp, really poised. He's making plays in preseason.
Yeah, and that type of quarterback to have behind Deshaun Watson, it was a quarterback that I was kind of low on. I kind of didn't know what he was going to look like in the NFL. But apparently, given what we've seen and given what the coaching staff has seen in practice and then what we've been able to see in some of these preseason games, he's a guy that belongs in this league and fits the current system and what the Browns are doing.
I wanted to talk briefly here before we move on. I talked about Dorian Thompson-Robinson, but the Browns' defense, I was really impressed from what I saw. Now, they weren't facing Mahomes, I get it, but that defense, breaking up 11 passes, had 3 picks, returned 2 for touchdowns, and recorded 3 sacks. We talked about this defense when we did our AFC North preview last week, and Jim Schwartz taking over at the defensive coordinator position. This defense looks a lot more aggressive with him calling the plays.
Yeah, Jim Schwartz coming in with that wide nine, although I'm a proponent against it because I think it allows for too much running room. However, when you have a defensive line the way that the Cleveland Browns have, that defensive line led by Myles Garrett, that wide nine technique is going to wreak havoc on anybody who wants to sit there and try to sit back and throw darts. You're not going to be able to. That defensive line is going to get after it. You're going to get pressured. And the time that you thought you were going to have, you are not going to have. Because one thing about that wide nine technique that Jim Schwartz had, we saw what he did with the Lions. We saw what he did with a few other teams as a DC. They get after the quarterback. And there's no change here. We're seeing what he's been doing with that wide nine technique since he's been a DC.
Hey, PGF Nation, are you tired of the same old bland food at your tailgate parties? Well, let me tell you about my friends at The Tailgate Foodie, the seasoning and barbecue sauce company that specializes in elevating your tailgate and backyard cooking game. With their unique blend of spices and sauces, The Tailgate Foodie will take your taste buds on a flavor journey that you won't forget. Use code PINTGLASSFOODIE for 15% off your first order at thetailgatefoodie.com. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP, and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Hey there, PGF Nation. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. So next time you're cracking open a cold one and settling in for the big game, make sure you've got Liquid IV by your side. Trust me, your body will thank you. Week 0 in the books. Man, was it fun to see college football on TV last week. Not a lot of great matchups. We did see 2 top 25 teams in Notre Dame and USC. A couple different guys that I could go with. Caleb Williams might be the obvious choice. This guy was incredible, Alex. 278 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks. He had some wow throws in this one, including a play where he fumbled a shotgun snap, scooped it up with pressure in his face, throws an absolute dime deep ball for 76-yard touchdown. Watching this game, I know it's San Jose State, but his vision, his pocket awareness, his arm talent, man, just off the charts. I was so impressed with him. Now, the defense, boy, we're going to have to get into that later at some point because they brought in a lot of talent to revamp that defense, and it did not look very good in week 0. Now, it's early in the season. Maybe they can put it together, but I'm starting to question defensive coordinator Alex Grinch more than I am the players at this point because I think the talent is there, and they are not getting it done on that side of the ball. But Caleb Williams would be the obvious one, but I'm going to go with a not-so-obvious pick here for my week 0 helmet sticker, Alex. I know it was only Navy, but Notre Dame looked really impressive in that win. Quarterback Sam Hartman has the Irish looking like they could maybe make some noise this season. Now, he'd be an easy choice for my week 0 helmet sticker, but I'm going to give it to the Notre Dame offensive line. This team rushed for 191 yards, 6 yards per carry average, and they didn't allow a sack. I was so impressed with the big guys for the Irish, man. They were pushing around Navy that whole game, and they were protecting Hartman. And on a side note here, offensive tackle Joe Alt, this guy's a stud. He's going to be a top 10 pick in April. He's a big-time player.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this was one of the few games that I got to see all the way through. And, you know, since we're talking about stickers and we're talking about Notre Dame, mine actually went to Sam Hartman because I was down on Notre Dame and I actually want them to do well. I mean, I don't want them to mess up my pick as LSU as the winner of everything else, but I do want them to do well. And one of the things I saw from Sam Hartman, he showed poise. I get it. It was Navy, but there was a throw, a touchdown on a quick slant to Audric, I want to say his name, Estime, if I'm saying it correctly. I mean, it was just a beautiful throw. And I'm talking about just standing there, throw it right down the barrel. Obviously, there was no pressure, but just a pitch and catch. But the way he placed the ball was so perfect. It was the ball placement. I mean, he could have put it up high, he could put it up low, he could put it in the middle, it would have been caught. But it was so specific where he put it that I was like, I really like what I'm seeing from him and the throws that he was making. Of course, it's Navy, but you still have to make the play, so I can't go against anything that I saw. Shout out to Sam Hartman. He gets my sticker for the week.
I love it. Love it, man. Week 0 was so much fun, but now week 1 is coming up this week, and this is where it really starts to get good in college football because we're going to get some fun matchups. I wanted to highlight some of the games in week 1 that I'm really looking forward to. I'm going to start with your Florida Gators here, Alex, at number 14, Utah. Right now, Utah, the last I checked, was a 6.5-point favorite at home. This game is going to be Thursday night, so it's going to be tonight, guys. This is a game to watch. The Utes are looking for revenge in this one after a 29-26 loss to the Gators in that great back-and-forth game last September in Gainesville, one of the great early season games of college football last year. Now, a big question mark for Utah is the availability of quarterback Cam Rising. from last I read here, he's still making his way back from that ACL injury that he suffered during the Rose Bowl. If he's unable to play in this one, that's going to be a huge, huge factor. But Utah's home crowd in this one is going to be fun because this is one of the best home crowds in the nation. It's going to be electric. It's going to be loud. That place is going to be rocking. Utah head coach Kyle Whittingham has said recently that the 2023 Utes are, quote, the most talented team we've ever had. That's pretty high praise for a guy that really doesn't talk like that very often. He is really, really high on this team. They've got 16 returning starters, and he might be right, Alex. This is going to be a must-watch game week one.
Yeah, I mean, my Gators, it's interesting. I said to me, this is a revenge game, but I received a call today asking me about betting on this game from someone that we both know very well. And he kind of changed my mind. I was very high and I said, this is probably going to be take the over. Cause at the time I looked at it, it was the spread was 10 points. And like you said, today it's at 6 points, and alluding to exactly the reason you said, their quarterback is still on their way back. So that's leading me to believe that Vegas knows something that we don't know. And if he's unable to be at top tier shape, even though I believe that in the trenches, Utah is better than us, but at the skill positions and what our transfer from Wisconsin, Graham Mertz, is going to do, and Billy Napier wanting to run the ball with Etienne and everybody else, I think that there may be a chance that Florida might be able to take this game, specifically if Cameron is not up to par. This is going to be very interesting. I'm truly paying attention because I had no interest in this game because I felt that they were just going to maul us over simply because this is a revenge game. But again, with that call I got today that I started looking into it some more, and you alluded to it when you were speaking, this can get very interesting because that line is shrinking, and I would not be surprised. We're recording on a Tuesday. It's going to come out on a Thursday. I wouldn't be surprised if this line fell to maybe about 4.5. If Vegas is looking at it the way they seem to be looking at it and dropping it from when I saw it to 10, now down to 6, I wouldn't be surprised if it dropped anywhere between another point to 2 points between now and Thursday when you're hearing this. So I'm interested now to see if maybe we can pull another upset. Now, Brad, one of the other games, and we'll call it another revenge game that I'm going to be looking forward to, is LSU and Florida State. LSU owes Florida State. Florida State did pick them off first game last season, and LSU is my pick to win it all this year. And I don't want to talk bad about Florida State. They are a good program, but I think LSU is just going to be on a mission this year. You're going to see them get stronger as the year goes on. That game is the spread is at 2.5. Take the over. Take LSU to win outright, and I would not be surprised if they go in there and they win by 2 or more touchdowns. I think LSU wants to make a statement with this game, and I think they want to make a statement starting out. And unfortunately, Florida State, you are going to be in the crosshairs, so I think you're going to feel the brunt of what LSU is going to do to the rest of the league this year.
Woo! 2 touchdowns. Man, I love it, Alex. No doubt about it. This is the game of the week. Number 5, LSU. Number 8, Florida State. This game is going to be Sunday in Orlando. Only ranked matchup in week 1, and it could have serious college football playoff implications on the line because we know these two programs are looking at the playoff early in the year. They both feel like they could get there. Like you said, face each other for the second straight year. Last year's game was an instant classic, a back-and-forth game, one of the best games of college football last year. I expect the same thing in this one because there's a lot of star power in this game too. LSU's Harold Perkins might be the best defender in all of college football. Man, is he fun to watch. Florida State defensive end Jared Verse, I think he's a top 10 pick in April. LSU's wide receiver Malik Nabers, one of the best wide receivers in the country. Florida State wide receiver Johnny Wilson is also a guy that I think is going to be a big-time draft pick. And I haven't even mentioned the quarterback matchup. Between Jordan Travis and Jaden Daniels, these guys are electric. This game is going to be absolutely must-watch, a fun one on Sunday to check out. Now, another notable game, not as big as that game, but I think one that's flying a little under the radar that I want to get to, Alex. Number 21, North Carolina versus South Carolina. This game is going to be played in Charlotte. North Carolina has a Heisman contender and a future first-round pick with quarterback Drake May. But the question is really whether the defense can improve this season because they struggled last year on that side of the ball. When you look at South Carolina, quarterback Spencer Rattler, now in year two at South Carolina, he could have a field day in this one because I have real concerns about North Carolina's defense. This could turn into an absolute shootout, but it could be a really fun game to watch.
Drake May is going to be an interesting watch this season. Though he's ranked probably preseason ranked number two in terms of pre-draft notions, in terms of work, he's going to have to show me something. I'm going to be paying close attention. I'm not as high on him as I was in the offseason, but now coming into the season, I'm pulling back a little bit, Brad. I'm pulling back actually a lot because there's something there. I can't put my finger on it, so I can't say exactly what it is, but there's something there that I don't like, that I don't think is going to translate to the league, but I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to him all season long.
You don't see it, Alex. You don't see it with Drake May. There's something that you just don't see in his game.
I want to see a lot more of him. I want to watch him in live. And actually, you were talking about me going to one of the games. I think I'm actually even going to try and go to one of the games as well, because I need there's something that's not there that's not like next level for me. So I want to see it, and I want to see it live, and I want to watch a lot of him this year, and I want to see replays of the game so I can really make sure if I'm seeing what I think I'm seeing or maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, he's going to be a fun one to watch because he is a guy that, like you said, going into the pre-draft, everyone's kind of viewing him as the number two quarterback behind Caleb Williams. A lot of people are saying he's a lock to be the number two pick behind Caleb Williams. But he'll be a fun watch this year to kind of see how he develops and if he takes a step forward and becomes an even better player this year. And I do hope you get out to UNC and catch a game, because I'd love to hear what he looks like live. Now, just a couple of other notable games that I want to mention here. Boise State at number 10, Washington. Washington is a 14.5-point favorite. Washington is a team that people are saying could be a dark horse college football playoff team. They're only a slight 2-touchdown favorite over Boise State. That's interesting to me. That's an interesting game to watch. West Virginia at number 7, Penn State. Penn State's a 20.5-point favorite. Pretty big spread, but another team that number 7 in the country. I would have expected that number to be a little higher. So that's going to be a good game to watch. And number 9, Clemson. This is the one that really stands out. Number 9, Clemson, who you said, I think it was last week or the week before, you mentioned that you were a little more down on them than some of the media have been pumping them up this season. They're only a 12.5-point favorite at Duke. That game is on Monday. That is very telling to me that Vegas has that line as close as they do. Those are some games that I think people need to circle as well, some under-the-radar games.
There's one more game I want to point out, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, because we literally, just before we got on, had a huge discussion about this coach and this team. Colorado and number 17 TCU. I get it, Colorado. We don't know. We actually don't know what Colorado is. I mean, he's flipped, I believe, what is it, Brad, 95% of that team. So this is a completely different team from the 1-11 Colorado team that was last year to where they are this year. Simply because it's Deion, simply because it's high profile, because of the coach and everything that goes around that comes with bringing in Deion, this is going to be an interesting game for me to see, because as you saw, Brad, in our pre-conversations that we were having earlier, everyone is all over the place with what Colorado can do in terms of their wins. We've heard anywhere from 3 to 10 wins in a conversation we were having right before we got on. So I'm interested to see what Colorado, win, lose, or draw, I want to see what Colorado looks like and what we can be in store for this season.
Yeah, that I should have mentioned that. That's a great catch by you, Alex. I should have mentioned that game as well. That is a notable game, too, because TCU, coming off of that national championship game appearance last year, a bit of a Cinderella season for them, but they've lost a lot of key players on both sides of the ball. So I'm a little hesitant to think that they're actually the 17th best team in the country. So Colorado coming in with that new roster, with the new coach and Deion Sanders, and a lot of hype and a lot of buzz around this program, he has flipped that roster and he's brought in a lot of talent to that team. Can he put it together, and can he put it together quickly is going to be really interesting to watch. Vegas has Colorado as their season win total at 3.5. So clearly Vegas thinks that they'll be better than they were, but they aren't thinking that this is some 7, 8, 9 win team like some people are saying. I don't think that they're going to be a 7, 8, 10 win team. I think that's a bit much. That would be an unbelievable turnaround. Quite frankly, probably the biggest turnaround in college football history if he was to pull off something like that. I think the Pac-12 in its last season, by the way, is going to be really deep this year, and it's going to be the deepest quarterback conference in the entire country. And I think that's going to make for a tough road for Colorado this year. But with that being said, they've got some winnable games on the schedule. TCU is going to be a really interesting test to kind of see where they are early in the year and what we can kind of expect from this team. Really fascinating team to watch. That is a fascinating game I'm certainly going to be paying attention to. All right, let's keep the division previews rolling, Alex. We're going to do the NFC North this week. I want to start with the Detroit Lions. This is an interesting team. They finished 2022 on a tear. After a 1-6 start, they rattled off 8 wins in 10 games. They've become a really trendy pick this year to win the NFC North. Now, the coaching staff is mostly back from last year. The Lions were able to retain both offensive coordinator Ben Johnson and defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn, when we know those names had kind of become hot names in coaching circles, but they're able to keep them on the staff. Now, this Lions coaching staff may have more former NFL players on it than any coaching staff in the league. It's an interesting approach that how they've built the staff and what they're doing there. Some of the key players that they've added this year, Marvin Jones Jr. at wide receiver, David Montgomery at running back, safety C.J. Gardner-Johnson, cornerback Cameron Sutton, and cornerback Emmanuel Mosley. Players that they drafted, some key guys to look at, Jahmyr Gibbs at running back, Jack Campbell at linebacker, tight end Sam Laporta, and safety Brian Branch. What are your initial thoughts on the Lions and what they've done this offseason?
I think people have kind of picked up on when I kind of stutter and I kind of give a heave-ho. But, okay, so let's just start with Jahmyr Gibbs. Overdrafted from my perspective, but I understand that you can utilize him all over the place in terms of what they do. And they do have one, if I would definitely say they have at least a top 3 or top 5 offensive line. So I think they're going to be fine at the running game, being that they gave up Swift as well as Jamal Williams, as well, who was the leading touchdown getter last year. So I think they'll still be fine. David Montgomery is a solid running back, and mixed with Jahmyr Gibbs, I think they'll be fine there. Cool. Jack Campbell, like him a lot. He popped a lot during the preseason, so I liked what I saw. Sam Laporta, best friend of a quarterback for the most part, getting those tough yardage. However, I don't like the Lions coaching. I don't want to say staff. I don't like their head coach. The rah-rah, for lack of a better term, I'm sorry, Lions fans, Rex Ryan, Jerry Glanville, rah-rah guy, it is a 2-year thing. It is not a long-term thing. Getting those guys up so high to run through brick walls to do certain things, it's not a real coaching strategy that is long term. And I think, I'm sorry, Cinderella, it's midnight and the pumpkin is now here. I don't have the Lions doing well this season. I think a lot of what goes on, biting off kneecaps and everything like that, I think that's going to wear off. Jameson Williams, I already have him, I would say, at least 60% to the bus side. I think he's immature, and I don't think he's the guy that they thought he was when they drafted him out of college in terms of what he looked like in college. And I'm not sure if they've done enough to shore up that defense as well. They had a very good offense. They actually were the number one offense for probably about the first half of the season before they tailed off, but still ended up top 5. But they were dead last in defense across the board. They gave up Jeff Okuda, but, you know, however, he had been oft injured and they weren't going to extend him. So I can definitely understand that. I'm just not high on the Lions at all. I have them finishing 3rd in the division. And unfortunately, Dan Campbell is a person that I have on the hot seat that potentially could be fired. And we could see Ben Johnson slide into that position, because as we know, in terms of how he's been able to get Jared Goff back on track and how he's been able to have that Lions offense, you know, riding high, he's going to be, with, if not next year, in the next 2 years, he's going to be a hot coaching candidates, especially, you know, we are high there reaching out a lot to these younger candidates, and he is now falling in that vein of a lot of those other coaches. So they're going to have to make a decision, and I think this is going to be Dan Campbell's last year, unfortunately, because they're going to have a down year, and Ben Johnson is going to end up getting that starting job.
I think the defense, especially that secondary, was a major issue for this team last year. They made a lot of moves to improve it on paper, at least. Will it pay off? That's the big question mark. Now, one guy I've got to mention here, you mentioned Jack Campbell. I mentioned him and you said how good he's looked. This is a guy that, quite frankly, I just might have missed on. I was not high on Jack Campbell. I thought he was a huge reach where they took him, but he has looked impressive. So that one might come back to bite me because he's been looking really good. I love Sam Laporta. He was one of my sleeper tight ends in this draft. Brian Branch is a solid player. Jahmyr Gibbs is a solid player. I just didn't like where they took him. So they've added some talent to this team. They've added weapons to this offense for sure, and they've kind of added some key players to that secondary. Like I mentioned, Cam Sutton is a really solid cornerback that they've added as well. You mentioned Jameson Williams, though. I think the suspension hurts this team because this was really supposed to be his breakout year after coming back from the torn ACL at Alabama. Now he's going to miss a big chunk of the year to start out. You're right. I'm really not liking the direction this guy's career is starting off on. Now, the offensive line for Detroit is easily top five in the NFL. They're a really good group, maybe in the conversation as the best offensive line in football. The question for me is, can Jared Goff, can he repeat what we saw and have the same type of season that he had last year? Or is he going to turn back into the guy that frustrated that Rams coaching staff? Big question marks here if they can build off of that second half momentum they had last season. I'm not super high on Detroit. Now, like I said, they've become a trendy pick to win this division. I'm not picking them to win this division. I'm with you. I think they finished closer to third. I'm going to pick them second. I think they still have a talented enough team to be a competitive club. I think they're probably an 8 or 9 win team. I've got them finishing second, but I'm certainly not one of those guys that thinks that they're going to make a whole lot of noise like some of these analysts I've been listening to this offseason. All right, let's jump to the Bears here, Alex. The Bears showed that they believe in Justin Fields. They did it in a big-time way because they traded the number one pick in the draft to Carolina for wide receiver DJ Moore and a handful of draft picks. With DJ Moore and an offensive line that also added number 10 pick, offensive tackle Darnell Wright out of Tennessee, and free agent guard Nate Davis from the Titans, I think Fields is going to have a lot more help than he did last year. The Bears are really hoping for a Jalen Hurts type of jump in year three. They're hoping that this is a guy that's not going to rely as much on his legs and that his throwing accuracy is going to improve and that he can build chemistry with DJ Moore early this season. The Bears essentially needed upgrades across this entire roster. There was holes all over the place, but they were able to attack most of those needs in one offseason. I've been pretty impressed with what they've been able to do on paper, at least improving this team.
So, you know, we've been hearing, we share a lot of spaces and I'm always in a lot of different Facebook groups, online groups and things like that, talking about this is the team out of everything that I've heard that I get the most people where they are all over the place about this. But most of what I hear is that they are trending up and I've been hearing a lot more of 8, 9, and 10 wins. And it's really has me baffled. I'm sorry, Ohio State, you know how I feel about your quarterbacks. You've never put one in the league. So until you prove me wrong, I don't think, unfortunately, that Justin Fields is not one as well. And Brad, normally I send you a lot of tape on things that I see. I watched the tape of them against the Bills, I believe, and there was a beautiful pocket. There were two receivers on a crossing route, one at about 15 yards depth, the other one at 5 yards depth that were wide open, and he didn't throw to either. And instead, he took off outside of the pocket to where the offensive lineman could no longer protect him. And I saw it about maybe 3 times during that game he did that. So what I'm looking for is, are you progressing in the offense? Now, I have a lot of respect for what Ryan Poles has done with this team and flipping this roster, flipping this offensive line, because a lot of people like to go off of PFF. So since that's what we like to do, they say, oh, that offensive line was atrocious. Well, it was ranked 14th. So that would mean it was in the better half of what most offensive lines were during the season. And by the way, the Giants were 25th and the Bengals were about 22nd. So I'm looking for the progression of the quarterback and I'm simply not seeing it right now. There's nothing bad I can say about their draft picks. There's nothing bad I can say about what they've done from a free agent standpoint, because I think the front office has done what they are supposed to do in terms of, like you said, getting that Jalen Hurts type leap that they're looking for. Not that he needs to go to the Super Bowl, because the roster still needs work, but at least progressing into the quarterback that they feel that he is. And I'm not sure that he is with all of these weapons. A lot of what we saw were a lot of behind the line screenplays to DJ Moore, to Khalil Herbert, and then Dante Foreman, another solid running back that they have back there. That's a smash mouth guy that I think is going to do well for them. But unfortunately, a lot is riding on the quarterback. The quarterback seems very confident. I'm just not sure if he's going to be up to task when the live bullets start flying. But I simply don't see it, which is why I still have them finishing last in the division.
The biggest losses for the Bears this offseason are David Montgomery and Riley Reiff. But they added Deontay Foreman and they drafted Darnell Wright, who I mentioned. And I think both of those guys could be and should be upgrades at those positions. Now, they also signed linebackers Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards. And I think those guys are going to lead what could potentially be one of the best linebacker units in the NFL this season. So there's certainly some parts of this team that are looking good. Now, the Bears haven't done much to improve their defensive line. That's going to be a big question mark for them. The secondary has big, big-time potential. Now, keyword is potential, but I really like a lot of the young guys on this team. Tyreek Stevenson, Jalen Johnson, Kyler Gordon, and Jaquan Brisker. These guys are all either rookies or second-year guys that have a lot of upside. So if that group can kind of come together, maybe this defense can be good enough to kind of help out this quarterback and to help this team along. But really, it's going to come back to Justin Fields once again. This is the big question mark, because worst case scenario for Justin Fields is he keeps looking to run when his first read isn't there. You talked about it. That's been his MO. He doesn't get through his progressions. That was my big knock on him coming out of Ohio State. That was the one thing I circled that said he has to improve on this by far the most in his game if he's going to succeed at the NFL level. And if he doesn't develop into the passer that they hoped for, there's another side to this that we have to look at. Because if Bryce Young plays well in Carolina, I think it could lead to GM Ryan Poles really regretting dealing that number one pick. And then his seat is going to heat up really fast. I'm with you, Alex. I think they've made a lot of nice moves. I think Ryan Poles and this management has done a good job trying to improve this roster. I don't think it's enough, though, because it's going to come back to the quarterback. I've got them finishing in fourth place. I think this is about a 6-win team. All right, let's jump to the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings last season was a mirage. Every game they won was close, and every game they lost, they got crushed. Now, Kirk Cousins had his best season. Justin Jefferson, we know, is maybe the best wide receiver in the game. I love that they added Jordan Addison, the wide receiver from USC, in the draft this year. TJ Hockenson at tight end was a great trade. They lose Dalvin Cook. I think Madison will be fine as his replacement. I think the offense should be decent. I think it may be even better than decent. I think it could be a top 10, top 12 type of offense. But last year, they were 31st. They were the 31st ranked defense in yards allowed per game, and they lost key players this offseason like Eric Kendricks, Za'Darius Smith, Dalvin Tomlinson. Now, they hired new defensive coordinator Brian Flores. I think that helps, because I think he's a great defensive mind, but I just don't think he has the players in place for this defense to do anything.
I think the key word that you said there is Brian Flores. Can he scheme something to get these guys going, because they did look terrible last year? We know a big part of that was why Mike Zimmer was let go. Kevin O'Connell was brought in more to focus on the offense, and we did see that offense explode last year. I mean, heck, Kirk Cousins was an MVP candidate for the entire season. They add Jordan Addison, so like you said, this looks like it can be another explosive offense. However, they did lose Dalvin Cook, so there is going to be a bit of an adjustment period there. I know Alexander Mattison is a decent running back. He reminds me a lot of Marion Barber III. And they do have a speedster in Kene Ngakoue from Iowa. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. And of course, they have TJ. They will have a full season with TJ Hockenson to see what they can do. But this defense, a lot to be desired for. I'm not sure what to expect because the outside of Danielle Hunter, there is no one that stands out. We know they went and got Marcus Davenport, but he was kind of a cast off from the, I believe he went to San Antonio, Texas. That was a first round pick that was, again, overdrafted from my perspective by the Saints. Harrison Smith, he's a possible future Hall of Famer, but he is about 30, he's about 35 years old. So he's getting long in the tooth. It's really been a lot more of this back end part of the defense that's really been feeling, because they've been able to get a little bit of pressure because they do have some guys up front, but that backfield has just been atrocious and they have not been able to fix it. I know Lewis signed from Georgia was hurt last year, so he's back. So perhaps maybe he can add something there, but I don't know. This is really going to come up to scheming and what Brian Flores can do, because we saw what he was able to do when he got to Miami with the scheming before he started adding some players. If he can kind of change the mindset there, kind of coach these guys up to while they're still adding to this team defensively, perhaps they can at least be in the top 20 as opposed to being in the bottom. I think the offense will figure itself out. Like I said, I think they'll take a step back because of the running game. But this team is going to be so explosive. You're going to be able to do so many things because coverage is simply going to roll to Justin Jefferson that I can't deny that this team is at least going to win 8 to 9 games, and I'm going to have them in second place.
Yeah, looking at this team last year, they were unbelievable. 11-0 in regular season games decided by 8 points or less. But they had a -3 point differential, which is unfathomable for a team that was 9 games over .500. No other 12-win team in NFL history was outscored over the course of a season, much less a 13-win team. That's why I said what we saw last year was a total mirage, and they've gotten worse on paper. I just have no expectations for this team to be any good at all. Now, I like Brian Flores a lot. But man, he's going to have to be doing it with smoke and mirrors because I just don't think they have any talent on that side of the ball to be able to stop anyone. And if he gets this group into a top, let's say even top 15 defense, then he should be up for coach of the year, because I just don't know how they're going to get it done with this group. They are so weak in so many different areas of this defense. Now, I think the offense should be good, but I'm not high on this team at all. I think they come crashing back down to earth. I think we know that a regression is coming for these Vikings. I think they take a major step back this year. I think they win 6, maybe 7 games and maybe even finish last in this division. Them and the Bears are going to be right near the bottom. And I also think because of it, it's going to give them a reason to rebuild completely and move on from Cousins next season. All right, let's finish up with the Green Bay Packers. Jordan Love is the story in Green Bay this year. And he looks composed. He looks confident. We talked about what he's been so far in the preseason. He looks good in this offense. We love what we've seen from this guy. And he is putting to use what he learned while watching Rodgers for the last 3 years. Also, this is going to be a really good defense that I don't think is getting mentioned as much as it should be in the media. I think if this team gets competent play at quarterback, plus a potentially elite defense, I think they could be that good this year. I think it's going to give Green Bay a real shot at its fourth division title in 5 years. Now, Love is going to be playing behind what might be a shaky offensive line. Let's say average O-line at best. I don't know how good that group is. So that might be one of the question marks I have around this team. It could be a problem, but there's a lot to like about this Packers team going into 23.
Yeah, I can say that I'm very high on the Green Bay Packers. I mean, I liken it a lot to what I saw last year from Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks with Geno Smith. And what I mean by that is when you have a quarterback of the stature that you had at Russell Wilson, the same as, well, actually a little bit more than what you have, as it is the legend of Aaron Rodgers that is in Green Bay, I think you're going to see a team that is with Jordan Love that's going to play a lot more within the system that Matt LaFleur has wanted to run, at least run the ball a little bit more, play a little bit more ball control offense. And I think Jordan Love is going to do that, going to do exactly that. Romeo Dobbs, Christian Watson, Luke Musgrave, they have the potential to simply do that. And then, of course, you have Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon as well. I like the way that this team is set up to go into the season, and especially the latter part of the season when nobody's going to want to go into Green Bay and they're going to have the defense as well as the run game to travel anywhere. I expect a big year from Rashawn Gary. I think this is going to be a breakout year for him. They still have Preston Smith. We can see a little bit more of what Quay Walker has to offer. And they drafted one of my favorite players in the draft, Lucas Van Ness. We know what that back four looks like, led by Jair Alexander, Rasul Douglas, and Darnell Savage. So I expect them to be a very solid top 10 defense with the way that they're going to be able to run the ball and ball control offense that they're going to be able to have. I look for them to not only have a good season, but to win this division and make it back to the playoffs with their first year not having Aaron Rodgers. So when you look at their draft, like I said, they drafted Lucas Van Ness. I love that pick. One thing I can always say about Green Bay is they never get big-time free agents. I think maybe Reggie White is as far back as we can go, the last big-time free agent, depending on how you feel about Julius Peppers. However, they seem to always be able to draft offensive linemen and pass rushers no matter what. And so I'm looking at what they have there, what they've been able to have there as young players going in. We know David Bakhtiari is a little bit long on the tooth and a little bit injury-riddled, but the rest of that line is pretty much solid. I mean, John Runyon, Myers, and Elgton Jenkins have been solid in that middle. So the middle of that line is really good. If Bakhtiari can stay healthy, he's a stalwart at left tackle. He may not be at the level that he once was, but he's a stalwart. And Zach Tom has been decent for the most part, as now they were able to move him. Now he's in the starting lineup. So I like what I see from them. I trust their drafting in terms of some of the offensive linemen that I'm not aware of, that they'll be able to figure it out should someone get hurt. And you have these young receivers and Christian Watson, Romeo Dobbs, and Jaden Reed, who are all starting. So they hit as usual on one of these guys. And I think it's going to be a slow drip, if that makes sense. We're going to see a slow drip of what the Green Bay Packers are. I mean, they start out with Chicago, Atlanta, New Orleans, Detroit, and Vegas. All those games are winnable games to me across the board. So they could either be 5-0, they could be 3-2, they could be 4-1, but I don't think they will be with a losing record going into their bye week 6. So they should be in good shape coming out of their bye week before they start to face a lot more of their divisional games. This is a team that I could say quite possibly could have 10 or 11 wins.
Alex, I'm with you, and I want to jump back to that defense, because this defense showed what it could become last season when they forced 12 turnovers during a 4-game win streak late last year. We saw them really starting to put it together. Jair Alexander is elite at cornerback. He leads that defense, and they could have maybe the best pass rushing trio in this division. You mentioned some of these guys, Alex: Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, and now rookie Lucas Van Ness, the number 13 pick from Iowa. We love this guy. He's going to be a big time player. I love Christian Watson and Romeo Dobbs at wide receiver. I love them as overlooked small school guys coming out of college. I like what I've seen in the preseason, and I loved what they did in this draft. Lucas Van Ness, Luke Musgrave, is a sneaky good pick at tight end. I think he's a guy that could be really good year one. And Jaden Reed, who you mentioned as well. All of these guys, I think, are going to be day one impact players. Now, the coaching staff has stayed mostly the same from 22 to 23, and it might be one of the more underrated groups in the NFL. I don't think we give this group enough credit for how good they are, how consistent they've been. And you give a young quarterback, a good coach, Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon running the ball, a top defense, young playmakers at wide receiver and tight end. What's not to like here outside of maybe, like I said, maybe an average O-line? There's not a lot of holes on this team, Alex. I'm not sure why more people aren't feeling the same way we are about the Green Bay Packers. I've got them winning this division. They might even win this division running away. I think this could be an 11-win team. I'm with you. I think Green Bay is going to shock some people this year. That is going to do for today's episode, guys. I hope you enjoyed it, PGF Nation. Before we get out of here, I want to give a shout out to our friends at The Tailgate Foodie. Check them out at thetailgatefoodie.com. I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.